welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thank you so much for joining us in the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host, and I'm really excited about tonight's topic. We're going to be talking about sex scandal in America, politics, and the ritual of public shaming. That's actually the name of a book. It comes out from Key Publishing, and the author is David Rosen. He's a New York-based writer, and he's also author of Off Hollywood, The Making and Marketing of Independent Films. He was originally commissioned by the Sundance Institute and the Independent Feature Project. His articles on media, technology, and public policy appeared in Filmmaker Magazine, Media Channel, Film in Focus, Harvard Nieman Watchdog, Hollywood Reporter, San Francisco Focus, and Red Herring Online. David, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and I appreciate the opportunity of joining you on the show. Thank you.
Well, I'm of course, you know, the name of my show is The Shame-Free Zone, so finding somebody who's got shame in the title of their book, you can imagine I am just, like, besides myself. Sex scandal, I get, you know, every time there's a sex scandal, I get to do a lot of television interviews, especially if they are happen to be politicians who are seeing prostitutes. But I'm wondering what kind of sex scandals you are actually focused in on with this book. Now, did your book come out before or after the Tiger Woods slap?
It came out before the Tiger Woods, but it's just like within weeks, and it's been a sort of, it's helped my visibility, Tiger Woods. The good thing about this book is that I it's a sort of a comprehensive history of sex scandals. It starts essentially with Pocahontas and the Puritans, and sort of tracks how these, you know, what's unacceptable sex, particularly, and what thus is considered to be a scandal involving a celebrity or public figure, if you will.
Right.
And then what happens to that person as a result of how the community and his peer, or her, mostly his, there are some women in this book, but mostly they're men, and most of them are politicians or celebrities, actors, athletes, etc. And what happens to these guys? And so my book is really trying to assess how what I call the ritual of public shaming changes over the last four centuries. And, I mean, they really were tough in the good old days with the Puritans. They would actually, you know, put a... I mean, you could get hung in the town square if, for example, for having sex with the devil. Versus today, where they just chase you around with a camera and you know, make a fool of you. So we've come a long way.
Didn't you have to be a female to be having sex with the devil?
Yes, you did. You sure did.
Doesn't it seem kind of strange that now we seem to be... we've taken all that energy. I mean, it's like women were, you know, lots of women were burned as witches and accused of having sex with the devil. And you know, there's the Magdalena laundries where young girls were put into slavery for the Catholic Church in Ireland, because they were loose or pregnant. But doesn't it seem like our culture has actually kind of gone the other way now, where it's the men who are really being castigated?
Well, men were castigated in their, you know, way back when. I mean, men did, you know, men, the big crime, I mean, where women were accused, just during the early colonial period, that is, women were accused of being witches, the big issue for men at the time was bestiality. And
oh,
so
wow.
Guys would get, you know, their nose cut, or their ears, parts of their ears chopped off, or they would get branded, or suffer other kinds of punishments. But
damn! So if you were putting it to the neighbor's sheep, I guess if you're missing part of
right.
your nose, everybody's going to know,
that's
huh?
Right. That's exactly.
Wow!
They would put you in the town square. I mean, guys had it. I mean, not that. Not, I mean, a few guys actually got hung. Men got hung, not for so much being witches, but their wives were witches. I mean, it's a kind of, we live in a crazy country. But anyway, those were the good old days. Those were the good old days.
Hey, wait, David, that is an interesting question. In your research, is it America that's really standing out as being obsessed about this whole sex scandal thing?
Well, Americans are really, we've had this sort of fear of pleasure. That's been a kind of a dark shadow that sort of hovers over this country for 400 years, and this repeated battles after battles over how do we the pushing sort of, if you will, what's acceptable sexual practice, and it's been a constant battle. And you know, part of my book tries to sort of look at these different movements and changes in the values and the mores of our culture in order to see how this battle sometimes is the good guys, and I put you on the good guys' side, with are somewhat victorious, and then sometimes we go through these rounds where the particularly the Christian right and Republicans, like we went through with the culture wars the last quarter century, if you will, but mostly during the Bush administration, where there's real pushback against the impulses of pleasure and openness and sexual intimacies, and it goes back and forth, but. But I can keep going on like this forever. I apologize.
Don't apologize.
No, don't apologize.
But it is, it is an interesting thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's fascinating. No, I've been studying this stuff for quite a while. And looking at the politics of pleasure, of sex, I mean, that's really it is. And, you know, it's been a battle. I mean, you know, whether it's over, you know, when is it acceptable for a man or a girl, a young woman or a young man, that it's acceptable to have sex. I mean, what, you know, we have all kinds of crazy laws in this country that, you know, if restricting sex, not only between, I'm not talking about something that's involuntary, that's like a pedophilia or rape or something like that. I mean, two teenagers having sex can get arrested and and people get put in jail all the time in this country for that. Although those laws are changing a little bit. But that's another area where there's been a real battle over who, because the impulse by this by the powers that be, and you know, rightfully a lot of parents, is to be protective of their kids and not to educate them. I mean, we can see with Sarah Palin's daughter, without educating her kid about, you know, good sex practices and how to take care of herself, she gets knocked up and she has a child, and you know, her whole life changes. And this is. This is held as a kind of a good value, that you keep your children sort of ignorant. So I'm just saying that the battle for sexual pleasure and fulfillment, I mean, it's how nature plays itself out in a kind of social context. And we see it repeatedly through American history. But the most fun part is, to me at least, that's why I wrote this book about sex scandals, is when you see these politicians, because these guys are for the most part hypocrites, and who have a lot of power and a lot of ego. And what's great is to watch these guys fall on themselves. You know, they get exposed in more ways than one. And what happens to them is the consequences. And we live in a pretty, for all the hysteria and the media, you know, hounding that goes on, there was much more fun going on in the 19th century. I mean, women who had affairs with these politicians and would have been promised to be married. It would, maybe some of them might have had a child out of wedlock with these politicians. I mean, these women would go and they would, one woman, in fact, shot and killed her ex, who was a senator, because she couldn't take it. And she was then acquitted by a court because they felt that the guy had been such a lying SOB.
And she killed him because he was cheating on her?
Because he wouldn't marry her, because he lied.
Oh, my God, because he wouldn't marry her?
Well, because, you know, she was his extra, you know, he had a wife and... Promised to marry, to leave his wife.
Oh, my God. And so she wasn't convicted.
She wasn't convicted. I mean, she, and then another, I mean, just other cases. I mean, I'm just saying, this is not new to America, the sex scandal stuff.
Well, do you have any comparison points? Do you think that other European countries are just as obsessed as America, or do you think America stands out?
Well, I would say, I mean, my knowledge of Europe is much more fleeting, and sort of not as thorough and in-depth. I mean, from what I understand, the British have a great time with scandals. I mean,
that's my understanding as well.
I mean, you know, they have a great time because the politicians are very much like Americans, very chaste in public and very, you know, very much married and, you know, bringing the wife out to all the events. And then what they do on the side, whether it's, you know, with a prostitute or an affair with a fellow worker or, I mean, a gay affair, whatever it might be, I mean, that stuff gets exposed. And, of course, the guy has to abdicate from office and run off and, you know, convert to Christianity or something. I mean, you know, they...
Right, or get converted from being homosexual. Like,
right, well, that's right.
Ted Haggerty,
Ted Haggerty.
His wife just came out with the book, Why I Stayed, and they've been doing the talk show circuit.
Well, he was on an HBO show the other night.
Was he really?
It was called The Trial of Ted Haggard, and Nancy Pelosi's daughter shot the film.
Really?
And, yeah, you know, it was an apology of it, which she's talking about how he had suffered, and it was all because he had been assaulted as a child by a friend of his father. So,
Nancy Pelosi's daughter shot the film?
Well, she's a filmmaker, yeah.
Did not know this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's done some very good documentaries, political documentaries.
Oh, no wonder Nancy Pelosi's into so much plastic surgery and Botox. No.
She wants to look good for the camera.
Well, you know, I'm just saying. I'm sure she's, like, kind of on the Hollywood track there.
Well.
So, that's very strange to me because, I mean, Haggerty spent so much time being homophobic and persecuting gays.
Yeah, hey. My goodness. But he also came out the other, I don't know, you know, I follow this stuff, so I apologize if I sort of get into the minutiae here. But he was, he admitted having another affair with another one of his fellow parishioners. Some, you know, so, I mean, he's...
Male. Oh, really?
Yeah, but now he's purged of all this stuff, and he's gone through a kind of a religious conversion.
But he's not gay anymore, right?
He's not gay. He's been... Yeah, he's not gay anymore, right.
Not until the next scandal.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, we'll see. But we shall see. That's the, I mean, it'll be an adventure to see what happens to these guys. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
They're great. I mean, it's a funny group that these guys, like, in this recent sort of wave of these guys, they're really these sinners have sort of gotten some redemption. I mean, you're talking about, the politicians with prostitutes. I mean, you know that, Elliot Spitzer is back on the trail, and he's now, I don't know if you ever watch MSNBC or, because he's been a regular on that, on one or more, like Rachel Maddow and some of the other shows.
I have noticed that he's been out and about, yes.
Yeah, he's been out and about, so he's back. And, did you know David Vitter? Do you know him? He's the senator from Louisiana. And he has a great, I mean, see, this is, you have to read my book. You'd find out all this gossip. Because, he's a character. Because, I mean, what's interesting is he not only had an affair with the D.C. madam. I mean, you remember her, the poor woman?
Oh, yeah.
She committed suicide.
So the story goes.
Well, that's true. That's another conversation. But he also apparently had an out of wedlock child with another prostitute in New Orleans, at a Cordello, who was a regular, and he's well known apparently, from what I read, among the sort of party boys in New Orleans.
Right.
So, and he's still in office, and they keep reelecting him. I mean, you know, he goes up this year. He's up for election 2010. So you should ask him. You should call him up and ask him if you'd like to have a discussion about his experience with prostitutes.
Because, you know, in 20 years of being in the sex industry, I've never had an opportunity to ask a man about that.
Well, hey, I've never met a politician. I mean, this is probably relatively, I mean, I'm not making this up, I got to tell you. And if you do check it out in my book, you actually see the sources. I mean, there's like, you know, this is known down in New Orleans politics, of who he is and what his background was. And, of course, he's made he's also promised his wife that he would he'd cease and desist all this stuff and become a virtuous man again.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
Right, exactly. I'm sure. But I think it would be an interesting question for you as a journalist. to find out, because he's up for re-election. So.
Well, let's talk a little bit, since I got you on the line. I'm interested in asking you a few questions.
Sure.
So you didn't quite answer my question. You said that they were prosecuting or persecuting. I don't know which way you want to interpret that. Men. But your perception would be that men are being more harassed about their sex life nowadays?
Well,
or
men
not?
Are more. I mean, we live in a patriarchal culture, so men have the power, right? So men are the politicians. Men are the celebrities. For the most part, I mean, and it's gotten better in terms of since the women's movement in the 70s, you know, things have begun to change, you know. But so historically, you have to see these guys have been the guys who've been, you know, I mean, remember, Thomas Jefferson is an example of one of our founding presidents who, he had a long-term love affair relationship with his slave,
uh-huh.
and who he had six children with, of which four survived into adulthood and all were freed. Sally Hemings, I don't know if you know that story, but many of our presidents have had, questionable scandals associated with them in their careers. I mean, we can go on that track, but in terms to answer your question, it's really about.
But was it really that much of a Was it really that much of a scandal though for somebody like, you know, Thomas Jefferson?
Oh, for sure.
It was.
The press at the time made mincemeat out of him. I mean, you should see Washington. I mean, when Washington, there were so many stories about Washington's love affairs. I mean, most of them apparently were made up. But the point is, we have a long tradition in this country of scandal mongering and telling stories of, I mean, George Bush or Obama kind of stuff that we see today. This is not uncommon. I mean, it's really not uncommon. My favorite of all these guys was James Buchanan, who was a president in the sort of first, before the Civil War, a couple of presidents before Lincoln. And, the great story of him is where he was a gay president, and he was gay.
What? Who was?
James Buchanan. Absolutely. Oh, no. We had Andrew Jackson's commentaries on him. And he lived with this guy whose first name, he was a senator from Kentucky or Tennessee. I can't remember off the top of my head. And they lived together in Washington for years. I mean, they were a couple. And, this is American history 101. I mean, no, this is actually.
Okay, well, they didn't teach Buchanan. I'm looking it up right now.
James Buchanan, truly.
James Buchanan, first gay president.
Yeah. I think was the only gay president, though.
What is this? Buchanan's inauguration was the first one because was James Buchanan our first gay president? 15th president of the United States, almost certainly was. Unbelievable. So how come that's not in the history books?
We got to read the right history books.
Yeah, well, when I was going to college,
they want to clean everything up. You know, they have to make everything clean.
We've never had gay presidents.
Nice
huh?
young girls like you when you went to college.
Wow. Huh. Okay. So he was a lifelong bachelor. That's always good code and a good education.
That's what they called it in those days.
Yeah.
But, there's a whole, I won't even get into the Lincoln story because there's a whole bunch of.
No, I want to get into the Lincoln story. I've heard lots of rumors about him being gay.
Well, again, it didn't need the same. They didn't use that concept.
Okay.
Because there was a whole different ways that, sex wasn't the same in the 19th or 18th century than it is today. I mean, we've become more sex. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's changing. I understand from a lot of my friends who are gay.
Aunt Fancy. Okay, wait a minute.
Yeah,
William
sure.
Rufus King. So this is Buchanan's longtime living companion.
Right,
they called him
right.
Aunt Fancy.
Yeah.
That's pretty gay.
Oh, yeah,
I'm bisexual, so I get to say things that sound like slurs.
But they were much more, I mean, there was, I mean, these boundaries. There was no such category as homosexual in the 18th and 19th century. That emerges in the 20th century. There were people doing all kinds of stuff, doing the nasty, as we say.
But, yeah.
But there wasn't, and it was sodomy was called when you had anal sex.
Sure, right. Sex between two men was sodomy. It didn't actually mean you were gay.
Right, exactly. It didn't mean you were gay. It just happened to have sex that way.
So, yeah. Grief.
But they didn't think of it as being gay. It wasn't your personality. It was just a sex act. You know, we associate personality. We switched it all around. Today, it's your personality, who you are, dictates the kind of sex you have. There, it was just the sex acts were acts, you know, and who you were is separate from somebody else completely. It was not your sex. You see the difference?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So
tell us something else salacious about a president.
Well, my favorite. Well, first, I mean, I don't know which is my favorite. They're all great. Well, you know, I mean, I won't get into the more current period because we all know about Kennedy and Johnson and Nixon and, you know, so I won't go there. And, of course, you know, but my favorite really was Warren Harding. Do you know Warren Harding?
Certainly heard of him. Don't know any scandals associated with him.
Oh, man, he was great. He had affairs in the White House, and he conceived an out of wedlock child in the White House. And, you know, and there's the great rumor, because he died 2 years into office from quote-unquote food poisoning, and the rumor at the time was his wife murdered him. So this is America. Welcome to America.
Okay. So basically what you're telling me is that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. Well, but the way, right, exactly. Well, in some ways, that's true. I mean, But I'm fascinated by the way in which these guys, like Clinton, I'm fascinated by the way the guys can survive these scandals and go on with their careers basically as if nothing happened and it doesn't matter. I mean, that's what I'm fascinated by, watching this sort of current crop of politicians who've been outed for their sort of nefarious activities.
Well, actually, you know, as far as like Clinton, I think his approval rating went skyrocketing, and yet...
Right.
You know, Monica Lewinsky, I believe, had to move to England to get a job.
Yeah. I don't know if she had to move. I think she wanted to get away from this stuff. Right. No, she did. She got away. I mean, she was, you know, forever tagged. But,
yeah, very, very difficult for her to, you know, do anything after that.
Sure.
As far as, her profession goes.
Yeah, I don't know enough about what happened to her after. I know she went either law school or she got an MBA, I forget, and then she went to Europe. But I don't know enough about her, what happened to her.
Now, do you write about that in your book?
About
Clinton and Lewinsky?
You're referring to, I'm sorry.
Do you write about about President Clinton in your book?
Hello?
Can you hear me, David? David, can you hear me? Oops, we seem to have lost our guest. Hold on here, and let's see if we can get him back on the air. Hey, for our listeners out there, I'm so sorry about that. No bigger nightmare in the radio industry than dead air. So, some kind of glitch going on there with our phones. We're real sorry about that. But anyway, I've got my guest, David Rosen, back on the air here. David, are you there?
I am. Thank
you. Awesome. Yes. Now, I'm not going to let you get away from this question here. The question I had asked you was, do you write about President Clinton in your book? And just to remind our listeners, the name of your book is Sex Scandal America, Politics and the Ritual of Public Shaming. And that came out through Key Publishing. So the question to you, David, is do you write about President Clinton in your book?
Yes, I do.
What did you have to say about him?
Well, again, I don't think, I mean, I didn't run a great deal about him because his saga, if you will, has been so covered by, you know, in the press, in the media. What I tried to do is to frame his experience as a political act rather than a kind of sex scandal. to me, his sex was really a secondary thing because, I mean, he did have an obsession, you know, and he for having, you know, trysts in the Oval Office, let's say that. You know, he liked certain kinds of sex acts in the Oval Office. And he had a series of, or a long history of having extramarital affairs with various women along the way, and I sort of document many of them. But to me, what was important about his, the scandal associated with him, was that it was really motivated more by politics than it was, and in the same way that I believe Eliot Spitzer's was organized around politics, because they wanted to get him out. Rather than the sex acts like someone like Tiger Woods or even John Edwards, say, where it's really just the you know, a kind of a media kind of fascination, a kind of a, you know, a kind of a peculiar kind of you know, exposure that they're doing about, they can't get, you know, they can't believe it, etc. I honestly think that for Clinton it was a political act. The Republicans wanted to get him, and they found the weak spot, which is his compulsion to have sex, you know, and which I consider to be kind of a Freudian sense, a kind of death wish. I mean, he wanted to see how far he could get away with it before somebody would come down on him. And
you mean go down on him? No, I'm just kidding.
And well, he found out, didn't he? Both ways.
Yes, he did.
So it really sparked a kind of the Republican revival around him, which then set the stage, and it hobbled his presidency in terms of, for at least during the period of his impeachment trials and stuff. I mean, everybody knew from day one that he was never going to be impeached. The Senate was never going to go along with it. So it was just a game that they were playing out politically to embarrass him and to stop the Democrats. And, I mean, his sexual history was notorious. I mean, people knew about this before he even walked in the front door of the White House. So anyway, that's how I reframed the debate, not so much about the gossip of what happened, which I talk about, but it's more about what does it symbolically mean for as a turning point in the way that the public exposure of and discussion of sex among politicians really changes. Because I use in my book, I'm really fascinated with what happened with, you know, with Ted Kennedy, and Mary Jane Kopechne. I don't know if you remember that in the 60s.
Now you're talking about Chappaquiddick.
Correct.
Yeah.
But that opens up a whole, for the first time, I mean, it's really the exposure of politicians. For decades, the United States has, I would say, for the 5 or 6 decades of the 20th century, since the late 19th century, all through the 20th century, The sex and private lives of politicians were, especially presidents and vice presidents, were really kept out of the media. I mean, so this one can understand that somebody like FDR, who suffered from polio, was never shown sitting down. You know, that kind of stuff. Nobody talked about it. And all his affairs, nobody talked about his affairs.
Well, and also wasn't his wife lesbian?
Well, there's rumors to the fact that she was bisexual. She had not only affairs, I mean, she had children with Roosevelt, but, I mean, Franklin, but she apparently had an affair with one of his, you know, guards, or his sort of police guards. But also she's had very intimate relationships. And again, it's hard to know what that means for these people, sexual or not sexual. It's always, because you don't really have nobody says anything, you know, but you have to read between the lines. I couldn't imagine it not being sexual, but I'm not in a position to say it was definitively.
It is kind of interesting that I think what you were trying to say earlier is that people had a different attitude about relationships, and I think one of the things you're trying to allude here is that sometimes people really did just have platonic connections that were very close and might look like there was something sexual there, but not necessarily.
Right, and that's the big question, and my favorite of all those is J. Edgar Hoover, because he's a Mary, you know, he was a trans. I mean, he liked to get dressed up in drag. I mean, and I actually quote the sources of a woman who actually went to a party with him where he was in drag. I mean, but mostly, more fascinating than the fact that he was in drag, he had a partner who was a fellow FBI agent. They dressed alike. They lived in a house together. They were friends for 40 years, and they're buried next to each other. And I'm going blank on the guy's name right now. But he was also a very senior guy in the FBI, And the question remains whether they had sex or not, whether we were just friends and a kind of intimate or not. I mean, and there's no, nobody can actually definitively say they did, but so you have to guess for yourself. I mean, they could have had a sexless life, but very intimate on a personal level.
Right.
You know, those are possible too. I mean, but to me, he would be, I would consider him homosexual, whether he had sex or not. Because if the primacy of the relationship he had.
Hey, sorry about that interruption. I don't know. We're having problems talking between Paradise, California, and New York City, but we're going to keep trying here.
No, I think it's a subject matter.
Is that what it is?
It's too hot to handle. It's too hot to
handle. You know what it is? Is Dick Cheney is tapping into the line.
The evil force.
Tricky
right.
Dick.
Tricky Dick is right. Boy,
Tricky
God.
Dick, this Tricky Dick number two.
Oh, God. Man.
Hey, is he in your book?
No, he's not, actually. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, he's with Tricky Dick or Dick Cheney?
No, Dick Cheney. I hear Dick Cheney was in somebody's book. I think that's why she's dead, but that's all rumor.
No,
I don't know.
Actually, you know, see, it's, I mean, you actually should go home when you should, because I have actually some wonderful stories about our former president, Mr. Bush, the junior.
Oh, junior?
Oh, yeah, no, there's two great stories which come from, you know.
I heard some good stories about Senior.
Well, Senior has a whole other stories about him, but.
Yes. That comes down through the professional pike for me.
Uh-huh. That's more, now,
yeah, but anyway.
I should interview you for this.
Yeah, you should. Only I would not be able to.
I gotta update my book.
You couldn't quote me on anything.
On the paperback edition. Wait a second. I want to know your secret stash here. What is going on here?
Yeah, so the kind of secrets that an escort knows are the kind of secrets that can wind her up dead, so they have to remain secrets. Anything I know about George Bush is nothing but rumors from other people that I don't even hardly know. So. Never mind. I have nothing I could tell you that would be interesting, and what I do have to tell you that would be very interesting, I can't tell you.
Okay. Well, the thing I'll tell you about Junior, though, is that there were two affairs that he was, extramarital affairs, that he had as time of, while he was governor.
Right.
And they're both, you know, they were both documented through police reports. Sorry?
You're kidding!
No. One woman actually brought a suit against him for rape.
Oh.
And she said,
why did she
sue
him?
Well, because she was raped. She accused him of having raped her.
Oh, my God.
And having sex with her and her husband. So it gets a little crazy. I got to say, you know, it's a little bit dubious. But the weirdest part of her story was that she was eventually found dead, and they said that the local police say she had committed suicide.
But she hung herself too, right?
No, I think she shot herself, though.
Oh, yeah, because that's how women commit suicide.
Well, I know, but I'm just telling you, this is part, and again, I'm not making this up. There was this local Texas paper, I forget the name of it right now, but it's documented, and I have this. It's one of these weird stories, you know, and there was.
No, her name was Margie Schoedinger.
That's right.
Wow.
And she was a
in July of 2003. July of 2003 is when she filed her suit, and it looks like that winter.
Right, but they actually took place earlier. The actual rape apparently took place earlier. While he was still governor, before he ran for president.
Unbelievable.
But anyway,
And do you ever worry about your own life when you go print stuff like this?
Well, no, this is not me printing. I mean, I didn't make this stuff up. I didn't do any research. I mean, this came from
It's obviously right here on the Internet. She died September 22nd, 2003.
I mean, I didn't make this up. I mean, I'm just telling you, this is the stories that are sort of out there.
No, this is crazy. She files her suit in July, and she's dead in September.
Right.
Wow.
So I didn't make this up. I'm just saying, so none of this. And what I have done in my book is source all these, provide readers with the sources of all this stuff so they can go back and check it. You know, so, I mean.
I'll bet you got some good pictures, too, huh?
Well, I couldn't publish all the pictures. They have some great pictures.
Yeah.
But I don't have, I mean, you know, the publisher was a small press, so we, And I, you know, it's mostly just a pretty straightforward account, but it's, from my perspective, having read everything else about this stuff, it's the best account there is. It actually, you know, really gives you the history of this stuff and tries to show how America has changed in the last few hundred years.
How has it changed? If you had to sum it up, David, really seriously, because, I mean, you're kind of telling me that it hasn't changed at all. So how has it changed?
Well, no, it's changed in the sense that, first of all, I think that, that we have, but I, the way I propose it is that early on, you know, morality really meant something where people were hounded and they could actually be, you know, socially ostracized and they could, in fact, be really severely punished, physically harmed. Today it's like a media circus. It's like a sport. It's like entertainment. You know, it's gone from being something confined, basically, if you will, to the church to now it's like an adventure game that you watch where these politicians are, you know, and they're rightly made fun of. I mean, they're mocked and they're made fools of. And then they rehabilitate themselves and they come back. And but nobody takes it too seriously because everybody knows that that morals have changed fundamentally, that half the marriages in this country end in divorce, the first marriages end in divorce, that most couples have extramarital affairs, that, you know, people have a different value system about sex. And they I think we love it to watch these scandals because you see these guys who are hypocrites falling on their faces. And it's gone from actually trying to police people of right and wrong to watching these guys being made jerk fools of. That nobody learned, there's no moral lesson in this stuff anymore. That's my belief.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that now it's just one big long reality TV show.
Yes, exactly.
For ratings.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. I mean, look at this schmo, excuse my language, but look at the guy down in South Carolina with his little weekend affair. You know, it's like, this guy was, but it's the blindness of it all, you know. And so it became this long, drawn-out affair. His wife left him. He's still the governor. Look at this guy out there in what is it, Nevada or Utah? I forget. John Ensign, who's the senator.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, he's still in office. He's, you know, happily going along, blah, blah. I mean, they hounded him. He made a fool of himself. And he stuck it out. If you stick it out, you can do it, you know, and if you're okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. You know, he'll get reelected, like David Vitter gets reelected.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
I actually kind of think it adds to their street cred, if you will. It's kind of like the modern man is a little bit castrated, and so when they go out and
I think you got a good point.
Yeah, and then they go and kind of prove their virility, and it actually makes them more appealing as a leader.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it adds to that. I agree with you. So anyway, that's in a fundamental sense the difference that I see that operates today than happened 200 years ago, or in the good old days where morality really meant something.
Okay, so now we're going through the same motions, but it just doesn't mean the same thing anymore.
Right. I don't think so. I mean, it means something different.
Yeah.
It means entertainment. It means diversion.
Well, I mean, you know, same thing if a young lady flashes her bush getting in or out of a limo, it doesn't ruin her career.
Well, and she's not considered to be a kind of a wild woman or a prostitute or a...
No.
You know, no, I mean, it's part... I mean, she's just by being hip and cool and sexy and whatever. And she draws attention to herself like a reality TV or somebody, you know.
True.
Right. So.
Yeah. Well, so do you wish that there were more repercussions?
Well, no. See, yes and no. Yes, because I think these politicians are hypocrites, and they should be really sort of, somebody should throw a pie in their faces about the fact that they have two standards, what they think they can get away with and what they preach to everybody else. You know, and to me, they're hypocrites. But the other side of me believes that these people have a right to a private life, and that how they function in public office is really not about our business and what they do in private. So whether you're gay or straight or whether you're into S&M or whatever your trip is, as long as you don't do it voluntarily or consensually with another adult, go for it. Have fun. Live a full life. You know, who are we to judge somebody else? But somebody should be held accountable for their public activities. And so I think when these guys, this is what I am offended by, is their hypocrisy. Is they'll say one thing and do something else. You know, like the Larry Craigs of the world, or that guy Mark Foley, who was, these two guys were as gay as they come, and they were all known to be gay. And they went off and they supported legislation opposing gay rights. Hello?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And well, even Elliot Spitzer was out prosecuting prostitution rings. And we're back. This has been a very interesting interview. Although, several accounts really enjoyed the interview. Also, it's been interesting because we've had so many interruptions. But, David, you are a real trooper. I love your positive, upbeat attitude and the fact that you're very persistent and you just keep coming back no matter how many times we drop you.
Well, hey, I think this will, we'll see where we can go. Just don't call me at 3 or 4 in the morning in New York. Okay?
I promise.
Okay.
I promise. We're getting dangerously close to 1 a.m. your time anyway. Hey, let's talk a little bit about public shaming. Obviously,
yes.
If it doesn't mean what it used to mean, it's now just become a piece of entertainment. It's still somehow or another supplying some kind of a subconscious need of some sort for the public, don't you think?
Right. No, I do. I think it's this, there's a German word, Schadenfreude. Do you know that one? You enjoy watching the misfortunes of others?
Right.
Right. And so that's part of it. I think we live in such a celebrity-driven culture. Everybody, and like that poor schmo who sort of wanted his son to be off in a balloon. Remember that one a couple of
years
ago?
Oh, I know. Any excuse to try to get on TV, huh?
Yeah, right. And that those idiots in Washington went in on the inauguration ball, I mean, whatever that was. I mean, there's some weird, you know, people are sort of obsessed about wanting to be a celebrity. And I think, you know, most people aren't.
I ask young people, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or what do you want to accomplish? And they're like, oh, I think I want to be on TV. And I'm like, well, okay, doing what? And they go, I don't know. I just want to be on TV.
Right, exactly. So anyway, I just think that for at least today, there's a way in which there's a kind of a wit, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a psychological thing. I mean, I'm sure it's so complex. But I just think everybody's fascinated by it because we see these people, men especially, of power or have lots of money and lots of influence. And they get undone by their own sort of another form of kind of emotional sexual greed. They love the power. I mean, I just think, and people, you know, watch them fall apart and go through all their mea culpas, and you know, and they're asking for forgiveness from people, you know, from their wives or their constituencies. We all enjoy these guys making fools of themselves. You know,
I think America does like to build its celebrities up. And then it likes to tear them down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then
once they've torn them down, they start feeling sorry for them again. They become the underdog yet again.
But they have to redeem themselves. They have to sort of make a conversion of some sort. They have to go to therapy. We have to make some kind of illness out of this.
Right.
So
Tiger Woods is a sex addict, so everybody
says. Exactly. Reverend Haggard, he went to had to go get counseling. And you mark my words, John Edwards has gotten counseling, and I bet you Spitzer's gotten counseling, and he's maintained, you know. So whatever happens, you know, you go in there and you have a couple of drinks and you go home. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, unless you really deal with the obsession, because to me, somebody like Tiger Woods really had a compulsive sexual compulsion. And Spitzer did too. I mean, these guys were really out there.
You know, I would disagree with you on both counts, by the way.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Why? Tell me.
Well, I work with sex addicts. I worked with sex addicts when I was working as an escort. And now that I am a sexologist, I work with sex addicts. And, you know, sex addiction is a very painful, debilitating thing. And it is not about the public shaming aspects of it, nor is it about an angry spouse. Because, I mean, the vast majority of people on this planet are in kind of these pseudo-monogamous relationships where they're trying desperately to be monogamous, but they may not actually be monogamous people. And, you know, if we account for that, if we've kind of got this compulsory monogamy attitude, like everybody has to be monogamous, then it's like insisting that everybody is gay. We run into the same problem when people are in the closet as gays, then, you know, they're meeting in public bathrooms or taking a lot of risks with their health in order to try to express this part of themselves. And mm-hmm. we often, well, I mean, as recently as the 70s, we were calling people who were homosexual mentally ill, and it was in the DSM.
Right.
So I would just say that we still don't make allowances for people to have different sexual tastes and also to have, you know, different sexual appetites. We don't make allowances for people to be polyamorous, meaning that they could be in love with more than one person at one time. We don't make allowances for them to be anything but monogamous. So, I see a young man who's basically worked really hard all of his life, including missing most of his childhood, to build a you know, hugely successful career. And, you know, his wife, I think, is probably very much attached to him for the money. You know, it sort of looks that way to me. I don't know. I'm not in their house listening to their fights, yeah. But she seems like she's a potentially violent person, too. It really disturbs me that really hasn't even come to the fore. We're just so obsessed with all these beautiful women that Tiger Woods has had sex with. We made that the mainstay of the conversation. But if I were to look at his whole life and his age and say, okay, he's had sex with how many people? I mean, it's not really that many for a young man who really hasn't had that kind of opportunity to get out there and experience that part of life before. I think where he went wrong, of course, is that, you know, he's telling everybody that he's in love with them. Well, maybe that's how it actually feels to him. But to tell people that you're going to marry them when you know damn well you're not,
right.
That's pretty dirty.
Yeah, I don't mean to use any, what I'm not a clinician, and two is I don't really know who these guys are. You know, I'm struck by the excesses that they appear to have gone in their pursuit of a kind of pleasure which essentially, you know, ruined their lives. I mean, to me it's like there was something sad about the whole thing. You know, they were driven in a kind of crazy way that seemed to have, they were out of, you know, they couldn't control their own passions, you know, their own desires, their needs, whatever you want to call it. And they couldn't control it.
You know, here's the thing, though. You know, we ask powerful men to be powerful men. And that's like, you know, and then we expect them not to be, we expect them to kind of act like a gelding or something. Now, I'm not saying that powerful men have to spread their seed everywhere, but I am saying this. We've really got some unusually ridiculous expectations.
I agree, and I think that's, and it comes, look, and there's lots of women who get seduced by these power, or guys, I mean, you know, but mostly they're heterosexuals, and tons of women, you know, are, I mean, I've never been in, you know, they don't line up around the block for my book signing, so what can I tell you? I don't know. But I, you know, look, it must be very tempting. I mean, you know, you're the king of the hill, as they say.
Well,
and
I have to say, a powerful, wealthy man is a very, very...
is a powerful, wealthy man, right.
He's a very seductive commodity.
Absolutely.
I mean, its power is sexy.
Right, as Henry Kissinger once said. You know, and so we all learned. No, but it's true. You know, and these guys. Look, it must be enormous narcissism or whatever you want to call it, to get to the position these people are at, because it's incredibly. You have to have incredible drive and incredible kind of single-mindedness.
They didn't get there by not taking risk, and that's one
absolutely.
Of the things I think
I
we.
Agree.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree.
So they risked. They risked in love. I mean, you know. It basically, that part of their life is on hold while they're building all this other stuff. They finally get to where they want to go, and then, of course, they're going to take risks in the department of sex. Why wouldn't they?
Well, no, it totally makes sense to me. I mean, I understand it. That's what.
Well, but here's the problem I have with everything getting labeled sex addiction. If you don't like it, it's sex addiction. I don't mean you personally. I just mean our culture. all cultures. Like, well, it's not monogamous. It's not fidelity. It's not procreative. It's not vanilla. It's not whatever. So it's a sex addiction. And like I said, dealing with sex addicts, I have to tell you, this is a really, really tortured place to be. Sex addiction means, you know, you masturbate so frequently that you can't stop masturbating long enough to hold down an 8-hour job. I know a guy who lost 3 jobs because he couldn't stop jerking off to online porn at work.
Oh, well, that's...
that's sex addiction.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, my book doesn't do it. It's not a psychological study, and it doesn't try to address this kind of issues. Because
yeah,
I don't think I'm not, you know, qualified to do so. And two is that I sort of take a humanistic approach more to these things. I mean, it's also somewhat comic. I like to look
at it. Well, you're taking it very historical.
Yeah, right. But at the end of the day, what I pose the question, what would happen if, you know, and I use various examples. I was, you know, I say, you know, once upon a time, homosexuality was considered a crime, and until the you know, Supreme Court with the decisions, what is it, the Texas decision in 2003, or the changing of the DSM, it's no longer a crime or a pathology.
Well, DSM actually was changed back in the 70s.
70s,
but,
right. But
the Supreme Court was...
2003.
Lawrence versus Texas.
That's right.
2003.
But then interracial sex, I mean, for interracial sex was considered a crime. And, you know, people were hung in the South for having
interracial sex. Yes, they had a name for it. They called it misogyny.
Yeah, misogyny. Yeah. So, miscegenation, they called it.
Miscegenation. Thank you. I stand corrected. Misogyny, okay. By the way, is sexism towards women.
No, but if these were once crimes and no longer considered crimes. You know, out of wedlock relationship, what they used to call fornication, is no longer a crime. I mean, these were the crimes in the Puritan days. These are all crimes.
True. It's just,
you know,
hey, wait,
if adultery wasn't a crime? And we have states, I think, I forget the number, 30-odd states in this country still have, and again, I have it in my book, I can't remember the number, have laws against adultery. What if adultery wasn't a crime, and what if people's private lives were protected? What would happen to the sex scandal industry in America? That's what I sort of conclude with. We wouldn't have sex scandals if people could have normal sex lives.
For somebody who doesn't need sex, I mean, you know, it would still be very fun.
Well, for sure. I mean, but again, that's why I went back to my earlier. That's why I go back to my earlier point about the hypocrisy, because what's most troubling about these guys is for the, like a Larry Craig or Vintner or all these, or Haggard or whatever. It's the hypocrisy of it all. It's their arrogance and their somehow believing that they're above all these social conventions, and then they fall on their faces. So.
Yeah. I think that's, for me, you know, I already know that a lot of these people are hypocrites because I've been on the backside of this for a long time, and I've seen the hypocrisy with the rabbis and the priests and pastors and whatnot. But I do think that when these people set themselves up to put people in jail, to make people feel guilty, to tell them that their immortal soul is in danger, and then they turn out to be doing things that are just as bad or worse than the people that they condemn, that of course we like to know about that because, you know, these are the very same people who are making us feel bad about ourselves.
Right. I agree with you.
Yeah. We have Lance Holland commented that he would like to hear a sex scandal about Cameron Diaz. Do you have one for us?
Cameron Diaz? No. I mean, you know, it's really about politics, my book, and it's really, I mean, I have a lot of other sex scandals that appear, but they're really part of telling a story about how our values have changed, and most of it is really about the politics of it, and who these politicians were, and what they did, and a lot about these presidents who I've mentioned.
Do you have the story about George Bush Jr. in your book as well?
True, yeah, there's two scandals.
Wow.
Oh, yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, that right there sounds like it's worth the price of the book,
But it's all these other presidents. I mean, that's the great story. I threw in a half a dozen presidents, and we haven't even talked about Lincoln. But, you know, we have all these guys have lives, and they did all kinds of stuff. Well, Kennedy's affairs. I mean, those are, or Nixon or Johnson. I mean, it's amazing. Most people don't know about Johnson's affairs.
Well, I didn't know about Nixon, frankly.
Nixon had an interesting, do you have a couple more minutes? I'll tell you that one.
You know what? Since we got interrupted a couple of times, yes, Don told us to go ahead and run over if we wanted to. So
I'll end it with Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
Nixon, while he was vice president, went to, traveled through through Asia, and in the course of one of his trips to Hong Kong, he met a woman who was a tour guide, and she was an Asian woman, and he apparently had, with Bibi Rabozo, his friends, they went out and they spent a weekend with this woman and her best friend, or a good friend of hers, in this very palatial sort of, you know, hotel, and this becomes interesting, this, you know, and then eventually she migrates to the United States and she lives in the same town that he lived in California. Now, and he apparently knew her for years and years and was very good terms with her. Why this is an interesting political scandal is because her former lover was also a major guy in the Chinese Communist Army, like a leading, you know, officer. And the guy who unravels all this is, guess who? J. Edgar Hoover. And uses all this information about this quote-unquote alleged affair against Nixon. So it's the politics of all this stuff that gets this, you know, as I mentioned earlier with regard, I think that Spitzer, if you read my book, you'll see all the coincidences about why Spitzer, of all the other clients, was outed in this thing and how that happened. So the sex scandals sometimes are just comedies or tragedies, depending on the person, but they're also used for political purposes. So,
oh yeah, that is the biggest one, isn't it? And that's what you're really trying to tell us here, I think, about the public shaming thing, is that we use sex scandals to try to control our politicians,
right?
And in particular, when we say we, it's not so much the voters that are trying to control the politicians as it is the political parties and their competition, other politicians that want their job.
Well, that's what I talk about. That's why I was referring to Clinton, because that was the clearest. Everybody knew his track record. He was legendary, you know, in Arkansas before he came about his affairs. And so it was just a question of when this whole thing was going to explode. And, you know, if this is, you know, like a bear going to honey, this is a guy who likes certain kind of women. And but you couldn't keep him away from it. So,
right.
I mean, the untold story of this whole thing, if I could talk about one, is the role of the wives in this whole thing. I mean, I've tried to write an article, I haven't been able to find anybody to publish it, about all these wives and how the situation among the wives is really changing. You know, to me, the best thing about John Edwards' wife is that Elizabeth Edwards, is she told him to take a hike, you know, even though she's dying. I mean, she told him to take a hike. And similarly, the wife of Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina, she walked out on the guy. I mean, most of these wives stick it out, like Hillary. They do the Hillary. And they love their man no matter what. And it's a kind of, you know, and they've done this forever. I mean, you know, this is like the normal way that politicians' wives work. And I'm hoping that we're going to see something significant. These wives won't take it anymore.
Interesting.
Okay.
Interesting to me that you have that stance. I know a lot of America agrees with you on that one.
Well, I hope so, because I think that these guys are hypocrites. And look, I mean, to me, it's one thing if and again, there's so many rumors about poor Hillary.
I have to tell you, David, these guys are hypocrites. I'll tell you, the hypocrites to me are also the wives, because, you know, it's almost split down the middle as far as who cheats on who. Men and women, both wives and husbands, are cheating at about the rate of about 50% of all the married people are cheating. And yes, the percentage is a little higher among men and a little lower among women, but that gap is closing really fast. And
in fact, I have some statistics in the book talking about married men versus married women and the growth of women having extramarital affairs has increased significantly in the last, like, 20 years. I mean,
yeah.
The real question is whether you can have, whether marriages can support, how do you end this kind of monogamy? Can you have an open marriage? What used to be called in the 60s and 70s an open marriage. And
right.
Can couples, many couples do it. I mean, couples who go to swingers clubs do it and all kinds of stuff.
Obviously the Roosevelts did it quite well.
Right, they had parallel lives in which they had other relationships, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, but there is a very famous letter where Eleanor writes to Franklin a letter saying, look, you've got to give up, and I forget which woman it was, one of his or else I'm going to leave you. And so he gave up this woman, and then she was the woman, and they remained friends, and she was the woman who he was with when he died.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, this stuff is real, you know, and how people work it out, I'm not trying to tell anybody what's right or wrong. I'm just saying that traditionally political wives have made the deal with the devil, and they've stuck with these guys. And it's interesting to watch of recently how many of these, some of these women are sort of saying no to the deal.
Right. Well, you know, but when we're talking about hypocrisy here, I have to bring up the fact that, you know, some of the women who marry these men are really attaching their own personal fortune.
Oh, absolutely.
To this man.
Right. No, this is a game.
How hypocritical is that if your objective for being in a relationship is the guy's wallet? That's hypocrisy right there.
Well, unless they both know it. I mean, I've seen many, I mean, I don't know personally, but you see many of these, called trophy brides.
That has to be a fair trade. If you decide,
yeah,
I want your wallet, then, you know, fine. You got my wallet, that I can take my penis wherever I want to.
But you see this with trophy wives. These trophy, what's called a trophy wife?
But you didn't hear my punchline.
Oh, I didn't hear it. I apologize.
You got my wallet. What I do with my penis is my business.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
I'm just saying, come on. You know, what's this whole broken heart thing if you're there for the paycheck?
Right, or my mother used to say, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Well, and if you have a superficial approach to your relationship, if it's an economic proposition for you and you're not going to be there for this man, if he's dead broke and never gets elected again as long as he lives, then what claim do you have to his fidelity? I mean, you know, you can't have both ways. You can't marry for money and power and then turn around and say, you broke my heart and this is a love relationship. It could be a kind of love. It could be a kind of love, but I'm a little over the injured party routine that some of these women are playing. I don't buy it. And not when you're marrying for money.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I have a hard time talking about this stuff abstractly unless we talk about a specific couple.
Well, Tiger Woods.
Sorry?
Tiger Woods.
I don't know. I don't know what happened with those couples. I mean, you know, she was a very well-established model. Her parents were big shots in the, I guess they're Swedish, Danish? I forget which one.
Right.
And they're very well-established politicians. I mean, his father was a member of the parliament and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So she came for money. It's not like she was like a slouch, remember?
I'll bet it's not money like Tiger's kicking down.
Nobody's got money like Tiger's, but, you know, and who knows, maybe they loved each other. I mean, I have no idea what goes on between the two of them.
I'm sure they do, but, here's the thing that I have a problem with. Whenever a man cheats on a woman, she is like this terribly wounded creature. It's the worst thing that could possibly have happened to her. And yet, you know, if he's face down in the grass with a bloody face and she's standing over him with a golf club, oh well. How is it that we don't even pay attention to things like that?
Well, I think she was really... Look, she was really pissed. Who knows what was going on between the two of them?
So, you know what? If that role was reversed and she had had an affair and taken an Ambien and ran into a tree and was laying outside the vehicle with a bloody face and Tiger Woods was standing over her with a golf club, come on. Guy would have gone to jail.
Oh, for sure. He'd be in jail. But, this is America, you know. There's all kinds of standards of justice. And my purpose is not to really, I don't know enough to comment on their, what goes on in most couples' lives. I mean, I have a hard enough time, you know, going through my own relationships. So to comment,
you and me both, sweetheart, and that's probably a good place for us to end.
Okay.
I thank you so much for being so patient and so
This was enjoyable.
Here.
Veronica, and you're a great interviewer because you throw yourself right into it. Thank you. No, seriously. You know, you're very good.
Well, thank you. Before we go, I want you to tell our listeners where they can find your book and give us the name of that book one more time.
Oh, sure. Well, the easiest thing is called Sex Scandal America. Three words, Sex Scandal America. The easiest thing is they can either go to my website, www.sexscandalamerica.com, or go to Amazon and pick it up. It's easiest that way.
Very cool. And now we can read all about George Bush's sex scandals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I want an autographed copy of that.
The scandal? I'll tell George to call you in the morning.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Veronica.
You're great. Thank you so much for staying up for the Shame-Free Zone. Right. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
What's up, everybody? State of Man. I'm John.
This is James.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Thomas.
And you're listening to BBS Radio.
Check out www.stateofmanmusic.com.
Dude, nobody does the www anymore, man.
Yes, they do.
It's not about the WW, Gary. It's about
the BBS, baby.
BBS.
Make sure to check out both sides of the story, our new CD at stateofmanmusic.com.